SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Wick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Wick.
A very good Friday. Pick five carryover players. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, SteveVick.com. End of the week. And while we're focused on, you know, big day, tomorrow, the first big Saturday of the Belmont season, the resumed big Saturday of Santa Anita's season with the Grade 1 Derby and Hollywood Gold Cup, as well as the Oaks and more, four other stakes. You got a cross-country pick five, combining Churchill action and New York. All of that is great. We're looking forward to all that. We'll talk about all that. But there is the matter of a $327,000 pick five carryover after yesterday's big prices, the big balloons that closed out the card. And we'll see what Nick says later and Dave Grenig. I mean, you got to figure, looking at this card and my analysis for the sequence, and Nick Tamaro's full Friday analysis is up at the website. The sequence has got a tricky run that is all sprint, turf and dirt sprint. And on top of all of that, you know, we got a little bit of a 50-50, 60-40 weather watch. You kind of dodged the raindrops for the most part on Wednesday. So keep an eye on that. And much like Wednesday, opening day at Belmont, they're holding the MTOs. So, of course, that kind of gummed up the works a little bit on opening day Wednesday. But the sequence is kind of unique from, you know, a configuration standpoint, because you've got a 6 furlong second level allowance, then a New York bred allowance going 6 on the inner turf, then a Widener 6 furlong turf test, Philly and Mare allowance, the Harmony Lodge going 6 on the main track with some very nice fillies and mares, and then a maiden special in the nightcap where you've got 5 firsters mixing it up with some horses that, you know, very much have yet to identify themselves as you know, career maidens. There's some horses that have run very credibly in that nightcap. So all 3/4 of a mile efforts in here with 3 on the turf and 2 on the main. So we're going to get some opinions, too. We'll touch on it. Maybe see what Nick and Dave, you know, if there's something they want to lean on. Big business yesterday in New York and a fun day that, you know, certainly for some of you, I based on some responses, I think a lot of you caught the one and only Chuck Lawrence, and Chuck, who had only sent out a dozen or so starters on the year, told you that Perrette had a real shot in here, ends up going off double the price that he should have. It goes off at 38-1, which was just insane. 78.50, a terrific ride by Vargas, who just, you know, basically sat comfortably and you know, chilly on the front, and you know, I certainly thought that he was going to get caught and would have ended up with nothing. But Perrette puts plenty of jingle based on some of the responses we saw yesterday. So I'm very glad that, you know, for those of you that, that came along on that front. And then not only did you have the $78 winner there, but you also had the nightcap monster price on Honey Bunnardini. And one of our favorite owners in New York or anywhere, Joe Gioia, who's been around for a long time and has been breeding a handful of horses every year, was with Del Carroll for a long time. And Joe Gioia, easy to root for Joe. And this is a homebred of his out of Mostis Hostis, A Talk Is Money Mare by the filly by Alpha, and John Morrison, who, you know, this was only John's third starter of the year. He basically, you know, wasn't doing anything during the winter, and this just sent things, you know, into the stratosphere and created this $327,000 pick five carry. First-time starter, you know, and Joe, it's funny, Joe, I congratulated Joe, and he said we had never really asked her for anything. You know, they just was coming along, and so the talent was there. There was also the 25-1 shot that 7-pound Bug Boy punched home, and that was Rickon for Dave Donk. And Donk actually has got a 10-1 today that I thought was, it had to be considered for the, you know, for the sequence for the pick five. But Louis Cardenas, two wins yesterday. And as it happens, he's riding for us today in the second on Minute Mouse. Tough, ended up, you know, the 40,000 non-2 group. And frankly, you know, you got some droppers. Chad's got a dropper in there that looks, I mean, looks 1-2, to be honest. But just happy to get back in action. But Cardenas can ride. This kid's all right. And you know, he booted home the not just the 25-1, but also Honey Bunnardini as well. So will be a big price in there too, I think, today. And I hope hopefully we can do the same exact thing. there was also a performance yesterday that is we're going to have to revisit and exchange a note with Andy Beyer this morning, because the performance of Tap It to Win, who we've talked about quite a bit, the allowance win in that very nice group, Mark Cassie for Mrs. Weber, and Tap It to Win out of the $1.3 million mare, 1.3 carats. And they were excited about this colt from early on. And he, you know, he was challenged early after, you know, after breaking his maiden at Saratoga, stretched out quickly, and, you know, didn't go well in the Breeders' Futurity, came back in the Street Sense, that didn't go well, and they put him away for the winter. And then came back at Florida and was pretty impressive, breaking through in the allowance win, and this effort yesterday. Andy Beyer, the rest of the figs have been made for Belmont yesterday. Andy is still working on it because the raw figure is enormous, and I mean, I called it a jaw dropper. That was stunning. The way he broke and wasn't asked at all by Johnny, took over. Everybody else was chasing right away, and when you saw them sort of approaching the end of the backstretch, and you saw what was happening with Basquiat, Errat Ortiz, you know, pushing to get him to keep up. And he didn't make a dent. And Tap It to Win, I mean, just a freaky, explosive performance. And there'll be there may be a very hard decision to make in about 2 weeks, given how well he ran. The opportunity at Belmont Park on the 20th, 2 weeks from tomorrow. So that was just what happened at Belmont. I mean, I could go on here. How about Churchill yesterday, too? Guarana comes back, and she picks up where she left off and adds to that whole four-year-old landscape on the Philly and Mare front. And going to stay focused, it seems on on sprints and some middle distance extended sprints. Guarana, 96 buyer in that impressive performance. Wet track, of course, yesterday by that time. By the way, how about Rich Eng, who delivered you first that Lord Dragon at a nice price, $13. And then Dak Janiels ran okay at 14-1, ended up third. But two good pushes yesterday from Rich Eng. And he also had a jaw dropper from Toby's Heart. Brian Lynch, the Jack Milton filly for Terry Hamilton. And if I'm not mistaken, Toby's Heart, I think Terry Hamilton's wife is, I think she's Toby. And I'm pretty sure about that. But Toby's Heart kind of stood and kind of, let the horses break out of the gate and kind of missed the break and then got engaged. Well, once she got engaged, holy cow. I mean, another explosive effort. So there were some really good performances yesterday, some interesting horses that are bubbling to the surface in so many different areas. And speaking of, a three-year-old like Tap It to Win, I did see that he had 22, which is a high number, of late nominees to the Triple Crown. Usually the third nomination, there's like maybe six or eight. But under the circumstances, pointing towards September, 22 turned up. Plenty of other things to discuss. The opening day at both Thistledown and Belterra, they did $2 million at Thistledown yesterday, and what a great story. Buckeye Bullet, how about a horse that was away for 2 years? Yes, last seen May 12th, 2018. And what was he doing? He was winning the Mike Rowland. You cannot make it up. A two-year break. And Buckeye Bullet comes back and does the exact same thing he did in 2018. He wires the Mike Rowland. Unbelievable. He's now won it three times in 4 years. Buckeye Bullet, the seven-year-old son of Dark Kestrel. And he's now 4 of 7 at Thistledown. Roberto Racing Stable, Louis Roberto Jr., who is only, he was 3 for 7 going into yesterday. So congratulations to everybody there. And that was, I thought that was something. Horse comes back from 2 years off and wins the same stake when last seen. They got started at Belterra. They did $1 million too. So nice start in Ohio. We're going to talk Woodbine a little bit later this morning. Ron Gierkink is going to join us from the Daily Racing Forum. And in fact, let me give you the full bore lineup. The Marty McGee visit, as always, to start the morning. And we'll check in with Marty about the stakes and more. It's not just the stakes to talk about with Marty at Churchill. There's also, even today, there's a race today that you should be aware of. And I'll have to remind myself. Oh, that seventh race today, non-winners of three lifetime at Churchill. And there's actually a couple of nice features, one long on the grass, and then this one, mile and a 16th on the dirt for three-year-old fillies, including She Dares the Devil. But Sheeter's the devil, doesn't have to win. She's 3-1. You got Alta's Award for Steve Asmussen, Fire Coral for Asmussen, kind of a personal favorite, Lazy Daisy for Doug O'Neill outside, and I thought Mike Stidham was interesting with Embossed at 10-1. So a very good race. We'll see. I haven't seen what Marty, what his thoughts were. So we'll find out. He's going to, Casey, you could go ahead and reach for Marty. And we'll get started. Probably only two breaks today because there's just too much to do. Brad Free is going to join us for an early look this morning. We'll talk to Brad after Marty, and we'll get into the Santa Anita action, which beyond the stakes, you've got the Saison debut as well. And I know that Jay Privman is going to certainly discuss that in hour three. Nick Tamaro to dive into the action. There is the Empire Six force out tomorrow, by the way, if you weren't aware of that, as well as the cross country pick five, which hooks up with the Dogwood and an allowance race at Churchill. So we'll glance at that as well and incorporate it into the discussion. Hammer, we'll check in with Rick in hour two. Dave Grenig, we'll get to Dave and get his thoughts on, you know, the first big Saturday and also the opening of the Oklahoma, Saratoga, training side. And I already mentioned Jay and Ron Gierkink. Get Ron in here, opening day tomorrow at Woodbine. So if there's time, I'll probably reach out for a Mike Welch visit as well. There's a couple of stakes at Gulfstream tomorrow, and actually a couple of familiar faces in there. You've got the Soldier's Dancer, goes as the sixth, and you've got the Game Face going as the ninth. So a couple of stakes born in there for J.C. Avila and Vast for Bill Mott. And then in the Soldier's Dancer, Croy for Danny Gargan. How about Mrs. Weber with Wild Medagliadoro as well? And David Fox has got Galleon Mast. A couple of nice small stakes, and there's actually the Ginger Punch as well. I almost forgot the Ginger Punch. I don't know how I managed that, but I only printed out the two of the three stakes, so I'll have to go back and get the Ginger Punch. We're going to punch up Marty McGee right now with the Daily Racing Form, the first of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, perhaps 6 Daily Racing Form correspondents today, Marty.
Bick. Hey, Bick. You know,
yo.
Dave Joseph used to do this shtick when he was writing for the Sun Sentinel. You know, he worked for him for,
yes,
I don't know, 10, 15 years. And he would be standing there in a trainer's barn, and he would just, if a group of us Racing Form guys happened to be talking to each other, he would sidle over, and then with mock horror, he would go, "I'm surrounded by Racing Form guys!" And he would just, yeah, he'd make a big deal out of it. So it became a running joke. So, yeah, you are surrounded by Racing Form guys today, Big.
Well, and, you know, yesterday, Wednesday, I kind of laid some knowledge on Mike Beer, because at the end of the segment, I offered up the, you know, Daily Racing Form, America's Turf Authority since, and it always seems to stymie Mike Beer. And he says, "You always ask me this, and I never remember the date." I said, "Well, the date's not important. It's 1894. I said, "What you got to say is something, you know, something clever about Marty." That's the hook.
Yeah, America's Turf Authority since 1894. You know, last year was our 125-year anniversary. I feel like we maybe didn't do enough to tout that. But, yeah, now we're
That's
into our
point.
126th year.
Well, we're into another nice weekend. Granted, Marty, we'll look back, too, at last week, Bell's the One and Secret Message, and you had a couple of other nice performances. The cards have thinned out a little bit, and, you know, some you know, some birds are flying, you know, home to their other coops. You know, but the racing continues to be solid, and you continue to have some nice performers and performances. Guarana yesterday. There was also that Toby's Heart. How about the Lynch debuter?
Yeah, we had Brian Lynch had a 2-year-old run off the screen. You know, I was thinking of this. We've had three of those now. I don't know how many 2-year-old races there's been. Maybe five, but three of them. You had the Lynch horse yesterday run off the screen. You had the Asmussen colt, who got the 81 Bayer first asking, run off the screen. And you had the, who was the filly? The Cassie filly, won by 10, you know, under wraps. So I don't know what it is, but I guess the debutante and or the Bashford Man, are we going to have the debutante? I think we are. Are going to be pretty good at the end. Or, you know, I guess they'll all go up to Saratoga. Maybe they'll save them for Saratoga. Who knows? Because Cassie and, they'll all be at Saratoga. Lynch, Cassie, and Steve. So, it's just been kind of peculiar in that way. You mentioned Bell's the One. I have not. Did you have Neil on the show after
Absolutely.
One?
Absolutely. Yeah. Who's good? Can't pass up a chance with Neil.
He is always so happy, you know, even if he's training like two horses or whatever he was down to there for a while. And, hello, Mr. McGee, how are you? You know, you know, 6:30 in the morning, there he is. You know, he always had something pleasant to say, so you can't, it's hard to root against him. That filly exploded. I mean, she just absolutely ran past those two favorites, Me and Mischief, and who was the other? Oh, the Brad Cox filly for Richard Klein.
Yes.
Yeah, ran past them like they were standing still. So it was. He's got to be really encouraged by that.
The only thing that Neil was downcast about is the fact that restaurants aren't open. I mean, that is a problem for him.
No, that's not true. They have reopened here. I don't know about. I'm sure he might want to. Might have won enough to go down to Louisiana. That's really where his heart is when you're talking about restaurants now. Is going down there to La Uzo's or wherever else he hangs out. But yeah.
Well, Brightson's is his place.
Yeah. You know, the good thing about
that's the one he thinks.
That's the Breeders' Cup, of course, for fillies and mares, 7 furlongs, which is, you know, even though the winning colors that she won at 6 furlongs, you know, I think her wheelhouse is the 7 at Keeneland. So I'm sure he mentioned that. And then
absolutely, very pleased.
Yeah, the other race, the Philly Mare Turf race, it was funny talking to Brendan Walsh the next morning. Actually, it was Monday morning, about how he said, I thought I was going to win it with the one, I think Zofel. And then he said, then I thought I was going to win it with the other one, La Signari. And then, boom, here came Grand Motion to spoil his party. So, but Brendan's been doing great, as you know, with Extravagant Kid. I think he's running back in. What did he tell me he's running back in? Something. But, yeah, I am waiting, actually, on Brendan. He's told me later this week. I hate to bug these guys. But, you know, we're all dying to know whether
Belmont.
Or not Maxfield is. Yeah, Maxfield's going to run the Belmont. You got to assume he is. Wouldn't he be second or third choice? You know, he'd have to be. I guess Tis will all be the favorite. And then if Charlatan were to run, although I don't know if Pafford's going to run him in that or the Woody Stevens, and then you have Maxfield. I mean, who else could be the favorite?
So. No, there's no doubt that's the pecking order.
Yeah. So, I guess they're just dotting their I's, crossing their T's. You know the way Jimmy Bell is with Godolphin. They're pretty close to the vest. So, you know, and Brendan, he can't say until Jimmy and his superiors make a decision.
Performance that I brought up, I mean, to my way of thinking, was the win from What a Country, Joe Johnson and Red Dog. That was the key to the late action, even though there were two prices that were higher, Whimsical Muse and Secret Message. But I thought getting to What a Country was the key, and that made the special. And, you know, just always happy when Red Dog, Gary Hartledge, has got himself, an allowance horse. And
yeah,
he does.
They hang out at this place. I went there probably 6 or 8 years ago. It's out in Shively. I went there 2 or 3 times. where they hang out. So I'm sure that's where they were watching it, since usually you see like this little section about the, you know, 70-yard pole where they all sit at the races, but obviously nobody's there these days. But by the way, Vic, I think, speaking of no fans at Churchill, I heard through a couple of sources that they had really considered having people, if not at least the owners, back this week, but then the riots broke out here in Louisville, so wouldn't be a real good look for them to have reopened. It would have been kind of tone deaf. So I don't know if they will end up having fans here at any point. You know, we have the Foster on the closing day of the 27th. It would seem nice if we could have people there that day. But I don't know if that's going to happen or not. And maybe Darren, maybe you could have him on soon and have him shed some light, if he's allowed to, as to where we stand with that. So as far as governmental things, I know Matt Haggerty this morning filed a story saying that the quote-unquote casinos or historical racing or whatever you call those slot-like things, they're supposed to they're allowed to open by Monday. And So slowly but surely, people are filtering back in. Pretty sure they did it in Arkansas, maybe, where the casinos are back open. Indiana, they're opening real soon across the river. So it's all slowly coming back, and which, of course, these historical horse racing machines at the various places, Kentucky Downs and here in Louisville at the Derby City Gaming, they're important sources for the funding and why these purses are so good here in the state. As you know,
absolutely, and you know, you got the summer coming up at Ellis. You got the 5-day Keeneland action that's interspersed before you know, before the Derby meet, and you know, the fall. So things seem to be kind of you know, the dominoes are steadily falling, and we seem to be heading in the right direction on a lot of fronts. Let's get some direction, Marty, from you about the weekend. And before we talk about the Saturday card and the stakes, as well as the race that's involved in the cross country pick five, I want to get your opinion. How about today, Mart, that very nice allowance race that features Brad Cox's stake winner. I think what did she win the fantasy? I think she won. She Dares the Devil, and I thought this was very competitive. This 8-horse field.
Yeah, it's the race where I ended up writing about Wilby, they call him, but I didn't write that. Will Van Meter, Tom's son, who's been training now since 2014, Lucky Betty, and just how this race kind of serves as a shining example for fillies like her, who, if the Oaks had been run on May the 1st like it was supposed to be, she would have, you know, just been a maiden breaker, and that was it. Actually, she won a she wouldn't have been in consideration, and that's probably the way a lot of these fillies fit the profile. She Dares the Devil for Brad. Steve Asmussen has a pair in Alta's Award and Fire Coral. I think I've actually got Fire Coral picked on top because there's no way she's as bad as that fantasy effort was. So, yeah, says she clipped heels early. So, anyway, pretty tough two other than, and whoever wins it, Will Van Meter mentioned either the Indiana Oaks or the Ashland at Keeneland. The spacing is right. This is June the 5th. Those races are the second week of July. So I would imagine you might see two or three of these fillies spread out to those type of races after this. So it's, you know, again, when they're running the Oaks and the Derby on September 4 and 5, it's only natural we're going to see late developers like this enter the picture.
Well, and I just pulled up the Hermes selections, and Fire Coral, She Dares the Devil, and Alta's Award, and actually you made Woodfin your best bet of the day in the eighth.
Love that horse. I mean, Vicky Oliver, she had won Loom huge yesterday, got beat by Ian Wilkes on the grass, but she's ready to explode, and not coincidentally, this Woodfin ran the best race of her life here last summer on the grass when breaking her maiden at a $44 mutual, so I really like her, and there's really not a whole lot in there, and the price they've got her is, oh, well, hell, they've got her 5-2 favorite, so yeah, Yeah, she ought to win. I'm gonna end up singling her in a bunch of my multis.
Well, and we should throw in, because Rafi Bejerano aboard, Bejerano wading back into the action back in Kentucky, returning a swallow to Capistrano. Nice to have Rafi back under the Twin Spires.
It's awesome. You know, I haven't been out there to see a lot of these guys, but he's, hello, sir. He used to always give me the hello, sir. Back then when so many guys were around him and, you know, he was young and all that. But he's come back an accomplished veteran. And with Rosario and Johnny and Javier and Jose having left, a lot of these agents and jocks are saying, thank you for getting the heck out of here, because now there's more for them to, guys like Rafael and Martin Garcia and my nephew Joe Talamo, who's like 1-for-60 right now. It's just been a function of just some bad luck and some bad mounts and like that. But they should kind of round back into form, you would think.
Let's turn our attention to the Saturday card, Marty, and looking early, two-year-olds, fillies for $75,000. Then later, we've got three and ups, fillies and mares going 7/8, some horses that might have broken their maiden already. Then we get into the stakes action, and the Aristides gets us going, and it starts the late pick four. Just a group of six, but there's some real talent here.
I mean, this is kind of not like what it's been here with just six horse field. I'd actually just assuming there was supposed to be a sizable field, because that's all we've had around here. But it looks like Bobby's Wicked One. He absolutely put a line through that thing where he labored in the Count Fleet. He's got to be the horse to catch. Although Volatile ran huge in his comeback at Oaklawn, and then Honest Mischief, who was in the, he was actually entered to run last Friday. I'm trying to think. It was the race that Hog Creek Hustle was second in. He was on the AE,
yes.
And he was actually the morning line favorite for that race. So Chad, who had told me a couple of weeks ago, he said, look, the 24 horses I sent here, I had a race picked out for every one of them. And so obviously Honest Mischief, it was that allowance last Friday. Well, he had the scratch, didn't get in, so they had to supplement him. I don't know what the cost was, probably a couple thousand, to run in this race. And he looks good in there. If he can run back, he is off the – he hadn't run since late November, so he's at that sort of disadvantage. But looks like he can stalk real nice behind Bobby's Wicked One. If he's good enough, he can go on.
That goes as the eighth and starts the late pick four. There is a turf sprint allowance, Marty, that goes as the ninth. And this race figures prominently for those that want to play the cross-country pick five. The two stakes that precede it in New York, the Westchester and the Intercontinental, 4:32 p.m. is the Belmont seventh, the Westchester, that starts the five-race group, and always seems to overpay, and it's always fun, and we're gonna try to tackle it tomorrow. So give us an idea of what you like in this first level allowance. These are boys going 5.5.
Well, I've got My Man Flintstone picked, I think going up and down this thing, usually I would like to take an older horse versus a three-year-old like him in a race like this, but it seemed like there were quite a few three-year-olds in here, and the older horses weren't that appealing. So I ended up settling with him. There was kind of an interesting horse in there, the Luis Jurado Comebacker, Tokui, number 9. I thought he was interesting. Alfie Solomon's right next to him. He's one of the lower choices on the line. He hasn't run since last year. He's a comebacking three-year-old. So this is kind of a mishmash, Steve, and kind of a mystery race. But I ended up with My Man Flintstone over Ace Destroyer and Tokui. Those are my picks.
I mentioned two horses that I thought were mildly One more than mildly high crime, 7-2 for Darren Miller, the Silverton team, and that race at Saratoga. Look back to that, and that would prominently impact this. And then at 5-1, Kelsey Danner has got Ike is great, and wanted to get the Munnings colt on the grass down at Gulfstream. Got rained off, and the colt goes ahead and breaks his maiden. And then she put him in the Texas Glitter, and he ran, you know, evenly, maybe a little bit of a reaction to the maiden win. But she perseveres with the grass here. And Ike is great. That effort, you know, breaking the maiden, and stylistically with Gaff Leone, kind of fits the race flow as well behind the speed. So I thought Ike is great, and high crime, you know, need to be on the tickets somewhere in terms of the multis.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough race, no doubt. Very deep.
Yeah. How about the Dogwood, the Grade 3? And here we've got, you got kind of an interesting collection, and my eye was drawn immediately to Edgeway, who was so impressive, exploding at Oak Lawn with that maiden breaker for Costa Aronis and John Sadler, and you know, has been okay since. Hasn't really gotten back to that that monster debut, but the ridiculously named Ain't No Elmers, you got Cherie in here with Baroness, Four Graces back for Ian Wilkes. I mean, these are some lightly raced three-year-old fillies going 7/8, and this is kind of an intriguing set.
Yeah, how does Ain't No Elmers pass the Jockey Club? But anyway, you know, it looks like Four Graces and the filly you mentioned, Edgeway, who got the 94 buyer, easily the highest in this field in her maiden breaker. They got to be the two favorites, and then the three fillies who are kind of right on the cusp, if they can rebound to their two race winning streaks, and all three of them won two in a row to open their career, those being Bayer Ness, Ain't No Elmers, and Magic Dance, and they all got beat double digit lengths last time out. So I'm sure that their connections are all looking for them to rebound, and it would not be surprising if one of them were to jump up and challenge one of these two favorites in the Dogwood, which, by the way, is a Kentucky Oaks qualifying points race, 28-4-2, and that'd be a nice little head start if you want to go on and stretch out to one of the bigger points races a little bit down the road toward the September 4th Kentucky Oaks.
Nice. Finally, Marty, give us your anchor leg in the 11th.
Oh God,
maiden.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big race because it ends all of the multis, and it's a wide open, you know, maiden special on the grass. I got Fate Factor over Urbana over the Share of the Horse. So I mean, the Margolis filly coming out of the Lacombe back in March, she's got to be live. I mean, she was a maiden running that. Finally, Robbie Alvarado gets a live mount. But I do have Fate Factor picked on top for Chris Block. We know the exceptional work he does with grass horses such as this, so I just kind of gave her the benefit of the doubt, assuming she's been in pretty steady training down at Fairgrounds and then here at Churchill for Chris. So I've got it 6-1 to end it.
Very good. All right, and I'd forgotten about this Urbana for Bob and Luana Lowe. Nice. Well, and Margo sent out three horses so far at the meet, but you know, had a from limited starters, had a very nice winter. So always easy to root for Steve Margolis. Well, Marty. Another nice weekend ahead here, and I appreciate the live looks. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Talk to you soon. Thanks.
Marty McGee, everybody, and the Churchill action. And that was good news that he delivered with the and I just retweeted, actually, Matt Hegarty's piece about the Kentucky casino options. Nice. We're going to stay right here, at least to the top of the hour, and Brad Free is going to join us. And an early visit with Brad, and we say good morning, Brad Free.
Good morning, Steve. Here's a newsflash for you. It's raining in Southern California. How about that?
Ooh.
It's wild. We woke up this morning, and it was raining outside. It's not going to stay. We're going to be fine later on today, but I just thought that was bizarre. Here we are in early June, and it's raining. But anyway, looking forward to the weekend. Some good races today. Seven stakes races on the Saturday card, and then on Sunday, of course, we see the comeback of McKenzie in the Grade 2 Triple Bend. So some decent races up ahead this weekend at Santa Anita.
A quick recap, too, Brad, from last week. We talked about the Honeymoon and the Santa Maria, and Fighting Mad got the jump on the other fillies and basically, you know, was not our it was the Honeymoon was the filly race, but Fighting Mad jumps and couldn't be caught.
She could not be caught. I have to put an asterisk next to her performance. It was a terrific, highly rated performance. She ran fast, 142 for a mile and 16th. The racing surface last Sunday at Santa Anita became extremely pro speed, and I'm generally not a big bias guy, but it looked like it might be that way when Maiden 50 won the opener wire to wire by more than six lengths, and then a couple starts later, filly with speed that was hounded through a ridiculous half mile, 46-2, for a 16 claiming filly, and she kept right on going and refused to yield. So it looked early on the card like the come-from-behinders might, in fact, be compromised into Santa Maria. And that's exactly what happened. Abel Cedillo put Fighting Mad on the lead. She opened up. She cruised along. And she was gone. It was a good, solid performance under highly advantageous conditions. We're going to find out at Del Mar how legitimate this race was. Baffert has always been high on Fighting Mad. He wheeled her back in 2 weeks from a sprint into this route, and she delivered. You don't often see Baffert paying $22 in a five-horse field, but that's what Fighting Mad did. Hard Not to Love ran extremely well. She did not come out all that great from the gate. She rallied into second, and CC pretty much laid an egg. I am going to give her a pass on that. She's already won two grade ones this year, and I think we're going to see a different filly when she shows up in the Clement Hirsch at Del Mar. So these fillies and mares will meet again, along with Always Candy, who's headed back to the Phipps, and the Clement Hirsch down at Del Mar. And a couple months from now, it looks at this stage like it could be a terrific showdown between Fighting Mad, Hard Not to Love, CC, and hopefully Always Candy. But give credit to Fighting Mad and Cedillo and Baffert. She took the track, she rode the bias, and she crushed them at $22.
Brad, question two, any update on Horologist?
Do not have an update on Horologist at this stage of the game.
Okay.
No, I have not spoken with trainer Richie Baltus. I do not know what happened. All I can say is what I saw. And on the head-on, her legs were fine. I don't think that... I don't know what happened with her. She walked off the track. She misfired. Don't know the backstory on her.
All right, let's turn our attention to the weekend and the grade ones, obviously, you know, the major focus between the Santa Anita Derby and the Hollywood Gold Cup, and we talked about that last week. And by the way, speaking of things we talked about last week, Brad, we talked about Abel Cedillo, and all he did was go out and and just light up everything. And I had him on the show on Monday, actually. It was a lot of fun, and you know, got to know him a little bit.
He's a really good guy. He's soft-spoken, a good guy. He's polite, respectful, and he's starting to make an impact. I mean, when you start riding for Baffert in graded stakes races, that's a good thing, especially when you go out and deliver like he did with Fighting Mad. So a good guy. He's right now, he's the number two rider in Southern California behind Flavian Pratt. So those two guys are pretty much dominating. Mike Smith does not ride as many horses as those two guys. But Sadio, yeah, he's been a welcome addition, no doubt about it.
Looking at the big features, and let's start with the three-year-olds, and the Derby comes down, it seems, to, you know, the Honor AP authentic confrontation. There, you know, there's Shooter Shoot in there to help the pace scenario. Rushy, we talked to Michael McCarthy last week, and he had told us, or 2 weeks ago, and he had said that he was going to run Rushy here, and then he also popped Friars Road into the entry box. Baffert brings Azul Coast, who had originally been thinking about something like the Sunland Derby. He ends up in here, and Anno Dor, who is really dirtied up, and I know people are going to be dismissive of him. That might be a little premature, but talk about the Santa Anita Derby.
Yeah, it kind of does. It's seven horses enter, 7 3-year-olds going 1 1/8, and it's the first start in 3 months for Authentic and Honor AP. And that, you know, throws a little bit of a monkey wrench into the, you know, handicapping equation, but they pretty much stand out. I mean, they both ran super in the San Felipe. Honor AP loomed up like he might give Authentic a battle, and then he just kind of ran out of gas. He was making his first start, Honor AP, in 5 months in the San Felipe, and I thought he ran super and was really looking forward to the rematch in early April in the Santa Anita Derby. But now it's been 3 months, and Honor AP is training very well, and I expect that he will relish the 1 1/8. I'm not sure if he can defeat Authentic, but if you're playing multiple race exotics, I think you have to make this at minimum a two-horse race. Authentic is drawn outside. He has his speed. He likes to do it up on the front end. Shooter Shoot is the only horse in the race that, at least on paper, would appear to be able to soften him up. And Shooter Shoot is down inside, and Authentic is outside. So I don't think that Authentic necessarily has to engage, but he's not going to be taken back, that's for sure. And Authentic, he's the horse to beat. He's the 4-5 favorite. Honor AP, he's ready to run a big race. And this is an important race for him to see if he can narrow the gap on Authentic. But it kind of looks like a two-horse race. Michael McCarthy does start a couple of very interesting horses. Rushy was always considered. I had heard a few weeks ago that he was toying with the idea of this maiden, Friars Road, in this race, and lo and behold, Friars Road shows up. He's 20-1. He's not fast enough, but he wants to run as far as they'll write these races, and I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Friars Road be running late. Maybe he can slip into the trifecta, but when it all is said and done, it looks like the two favorites really should. They kind of stand out, at least going into the race, Authentic and Honor AP.
Obviously, the points that are on the line in here and launching point toward the summer, and be interesting to see how, you know, particularly how you know, the top finishers in here, how they start to angle toward the Derby, Brad. And, of course, Authentic this week being corralled by Spendthrift, who shows up now on the ownership line for his stallion career down the road. Let's turn to the grade one for the elders, the Hollywood Gold Cup, and a lot of familiar faces in here, just a six-pack, but it's all right, this group.
Yeah, it's all right. The best horse, the best older horse in California, is not in this race. He actually runs Sunday in the 7 furlong Triple Bend, and that's McKenzie. Talking to Baffert early this week, he said if the Hollywood Gold Cup had been shortened up to you know, 1 1/8, McKenzie would probably be in this field. McKenzie, but Baffert's trying to get back to the Met Mile with McKenzie and kind of restore his reputation, and he looks like he kind of lays over the field in the Triple Bend on Sunday. But McKenzie's not in the Gold Cup, a field of six, and Higher Power trying to, you know, restore his reputation. He looked like one of the top handicap horses in the country, or in the California, at least last year. He was, because his win in the Pacific Classic was nothing short of dominant with a 107 buyer speed figure. And his next couple starts, you know, he blew the brake, stumbled in the Awesome Again. He didn't come out all that well in the Pacific Classic or in the Breeders' Cup Classic. He finished third in both those races. He ran well in both those races, but this is a horse that tends to get a little bit anxious inside the starting gate. He doesn't always come out with the field. And regardless of whether you're going 6 furlongs or a mile and one quarter, in my opinion, the start is the most important part of the race. And you can't concede an advantage to these good horses. So Higher Power and Flavian Pratt knows what is under him. He understands and recognizes the importance of a clean break. And so Higher Power is going to have to come out with the field. This field is not exactly, you know, loaded with speed. Of course, you wouldn't expect it to be with only 6 in there. And Brownstorm, he set the pace in his last 2 starts. He will be forwardly placed, and I would assume that Improbable will as well. Those are the 2 key front runners in the field. Along with, then you have Midcourt, who has run well on the front end. She takes blinkers off, which was a little bit interesting. He's another horse that doesn't always come out of the gate in top order. But the pace scenario of this race is probably going to determine whether or not Improbable, who I picked on top, can stay the mile and a quarter or not. I picked him for a couple reasons. He has a recent race. A lot of these horses are coming in off of a long layoff, including the favorites.
Good point.
Higher Power, 9-5 on John White's morning line. He hasn't started since January, and you could really say he hasn't produced an effort since last fall, because his last place finish in the Pegasus in January at Gulfstream Park was kind of a no count. He came out of that race with a high white blood count. He was sick, and he has since recovered. He also was being compromised by stomach ulcers. So all that's been cleared up for Higher Power. But back to the pace scenario, it doesn't look like they're going to be going very fast, and that could definitely benefit Improbable. He has that race under his belt. It was in early April at Oaklawn Park, and he ran super under the conditions. He was caught wide from post 11. He was 4 wide every step of the way. He opened up in the lane by 2 lengths, and then a very good horse came and wore him down. But Improbable ended up finishing second. And I don't know if you guys have seen the sheets number on Improbable yet, but on Thoroughgraph, Improbable -3.5 on Thoroughgraph. So, of course, Thoroughgraph speed figures take into consideration ground loss and weight carried, and that -3.5 is out of this world. If he runs another -3.5 on Saturday, and he can get the mile and a quarter, they won't beat him, and they should be going at a relatively tepid pace up front, Improbable and or Brownstorm, and that's kind of the race. Now, maybe Improbable can't get a mile and a quarter, and if he doesn't, then I think just about anything can happen. Even Steve Asmussen trained tenfold, I think, is very interesting. He hasn't hit the board in 7 consecutive races, but he's been running well enough and has run well enough to suggest that if some of these horses are, you know, distance challenged or fitness challenged, that maybe tenfold could possibly come in and spring the upset, the same thing that Dino Rosso did a year ago. He kind of slipped in under the radar, at least under my radar. I completely overlooked Dino Rosso at the Gold Cup last year, coming in off a nondescript sprint in New York, and he posted the upset in the Hollywood Gold Cup. Turned out to be a much better horse than we may have known at the time, because he won the Breeders' Cup. But tenfold, also a son of Curlin, shipping in. And this is kind of a stallion-making type of race for tenfold. It's a relatively soft grade one. And if this son of Curlin can knock out the grade one, he becomes a lot more attractive as a stallion prospect. And I don't think that Steve Asmussen would put tenfold on a plane trying to pick up a check. I think they're in this to win it. And tenfold should relish the mile and a quarter. But it looks to me like Improbable is the most probable winner, and recognizing that Higher Power, if he runs like he's been training and if he can, you know, show up, for his first start since January, he's going to give them a battle as well. So it's an intriguing race, a small field. There's lots of small fields on the Saturday card, and I think Improbable is the right horse.
Brad, before I touch on a couple of other spots, let's also mention the Oaks. And the Oaks has already lost Smiling Shirley, so we're down to a four-horse field already. And in a lot of ways, I mean, Swift Skydiver, the focal point with McPeak coming into town. But, you know, Michael McCarthy's got Speech, who's credible. And Merneith has not really lived up to expectation, but... you know, maybe under this scenario, this is the time to look at her a little bit.
Well, she did not live up to expectations her first two starts, which coincidentally were right here at Santa Anita. She was odds on 1-5 first time out. She finished second. She was 6-5 second time out, stretching out to a mile, and she finished second again. Baffert sent her back to Oaklawn. She caught a wet track and she crushed the field. So there's a couple of possibilities with regards to Merneith, who's probably going to set the pace in the Santa Anita Oaks. Either she needed a couple starts before the light bulb finally went on, or maybe she's not as effective on the Santa Anita surface. She's certainly trained very well going into her career debut in January. She trained at Santa Anita and trained well. So those were two disappointing efforts. She needs to show up and show that she can perform in the afternoon on the Santa Anita surface. I wouldn't sell her short. This is a four-horse field, so you know you're not going to get any wagering value on anybody. Merneith is the horse to catch. She might shake loose. She might be gone. I kind of like Speech a little bit, and I found it fascinating for any handicapper who uses speed figures, and I do, and I look at buyers and I look at Thoroughgraph, the fascinating discrepancy in buyers and Thoroughgraph for Speech's most recent start I just think it's a very interesting situation. Speech earned a 97 buyer speed figure last time out. That was finishing second behind Gamine in an allowance race at Oaklawn Park. But her Thoroughgraph number came back as a mare 5. That's not very fast relative to the 97 buyer. Conversely, Swift Skydiver, she earned a 99 buyer winning the Fantasy and a minus a quarter on Sheets. So on Sheets, there's no comparison between Swift Skydiver and Speech. Swift Skydiver should destroy Speech according to the Thoroughgraph numbers. But on buyer speed figures, they're very evenly matched. Swift Skydiver at 99 and Speech at 97. I pick Speech in the Santa Anita Oaks probably because I'm generally prejudiced against horses shipping to California and running on dirt. I think it's a very tall, tough ask for horses to do this, ship east or midwest into California. Of course, there are exceptions. Vino Rosso did it last year in the Gold Cup, and McPeak has done it. He did it 10 years ago with a filly named Striking Dancer in the La Cunada. So Swift Skydiver, who she's won at Gulfstream, she's won at Oaklawn, she's won at Churchill Downs. She doesn't need to take the track with her, but I still think it's very tough to come in and play in the Californian's backyard and defeat a couple of very promising fillies in Speech and Merneith. But it's only four-horse field. We had four in the race last year that was won by Bellafina. Four horses, three of them are very good. Regal Beauty trying to get in there and pick up a piece of it.
Mostly some short-priced favorites to contend with as you look around this card. And I do see... I do see in the ninth in the Cinema, KP All Systems Go, who actually is second choice at 9-5 for Jeff Mullins. But that happens to be a horse that, not that I know anything special about it, but Carl Pergola had a period earlier in the winter where he was sending out one after another of his horses with the KP moniker. And so they're easy to spot. And this one, you know, won back-to-back and now has had the break and, you know, looks ready to fire. Any other spots that you want to touch on? We got Cezanne's debut coming up mid-card, too.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting race. That's race number six. Saison, $3.65 million two-year-old purchase last year, the highest in about 15 years. And when I was talking to Baffert on early Wednesday morning before the draw, asking him about Saison, because I can read the condition book like anybody else can, and he swore me to secrecy. Is don't say anything about this race until they call a final and, you know, draw the race, because Baffert really was looking forward to getting this horse into a race. He, you know, wants to see him run. He was actually up to a half mile in his workouts last summer at Del Mar, and Baffert pulled the plug. Two-year-olds, you know, they sometimes come up with issues that just require a little bit of time, but this is a colt that worked Ken Flatt at the preview last year before he was sold and was the talk of the sale and fetched the big price tag. So that should be very, very interesting. Saison is listed at 4-5 in race number six. He has to break from the rail. He's not necessarily a slam dunk. Baffert does not think he's a sprinter, but he should be fun to watch. And if he runs like he trains, he could put on a show. And it's, by the way, it's not too late for a first-time starter to be, you know, mentioned. I know we're in June, and but it's not too late for a first-time starter to debut and then go into the Kentucky Derby. In fact, the Derby's still 3 months away, and I think Justify, he made his career debut something like 2.5 months before the Kentucky Derby. So we'll find out how good Saison is. Race number seven marks the comeback of a very good turf miler by the name of Prince Earl. He's a graded stakes winner, and the three times that he has run fresh, his career debut and twice off long layoffs, he has delivered victories, and he kind of outclasses the field. The Crystal Waters for California Breds at a mile, and he should be fun at a short number. He's the 2-1 favorite, Prince Earl, in race number seven. It looks like a card that's kind of very, very chalky. The average field size is 6.6 over the 11-race card, so it's going to be tough to find value. Maybe in the last race of the day, there's a 4-1 shot that I really like because the pace scenario benefits number nine, Dim Lights. This field came up short on speed. It's a 6.5-furlong dirt sprint for Calbred fillies and mares, and there's very little early gas in the race, and Dim Lights could have it her own way on the front end. Not certain yet, and nobody can be, that dirt is her preferred surface, because she's only started once on dirt. She finished eighth, but they were smoking early. That was in the Evening Jewel last time out. I think she's going to clear the field, and Dim Lights should be long gone. She's listed at 4-1 in race number 11, and that's about as creative as I can get, a 4-1 shot on a Saturday card where the field's, most of the races came up a little bit on the short side as far as quantity goes.
Finally, Brad Free with us from the Forum, of course, a five-horse field on Sunday. You did reference the triple bend and now grade two. And here you've got another big Baffert Barn favorite, particularly a favorite. And McKenzie comes back after the really disappointing trip to Saudi Arabia, where he made tremendous sense in so many different ways, including the fact that it was a one-turn mile and an eighth, and he starts off the season going seven-eighths.
Yeah, I mean, he pretty much lays over the field, and I don't know that he had an excuse in Saudi Arabia. He just did not show up, which is completely uncharacteristic for McKenzie. He doesn't win them all, but he always runs his race, and that was a one-turn mile and one-eighth. It should have hit him right between the eyes. I think he was among the fastest horses going in, along with Maximum Security, and for whatever reason, he laid an egg that day. But he has returned to train very well. He's shortening up to 7 furlongs, and from the outside post, he has enough speed to be forwardly placed. He'll be tough to beat, and if he runs well on Sunday, we're going to see him next in the Met Mile. And as we remember last year, he finished second last year in the Met Mile, beaten less than a length by a very good horse named Matoli. McKenzie, an argument could be made that he was best of that day. He had a brutal trip in the Met Mile, and that's the race that kind of makes the stallion. So Baffert's trying to get back to the Met Mile and give give another shot with McKenzie. But in the triple bend, he has to beat Flagstaff, who, boy, you talk about a bad trip. He should have won the Count Fleet in April at Oaklawn, but he was completely left at the break and raced wide and missed by less than a length. He should have won that race. He's emerged at age six as one of the top sprinters in California. I don't think he's quite in McKenzie's league, but he'll show up and he'll make a race of it. So McKenzie's race to lose, the triple bend on Sunday, that's race number eight. I would expect his odds to be, you know, somewhere in the low odds on range.
Brad Free, everybody. Brad Free 1 on Twitter. And for those of you that ask about books, in fact, I've got an email I've got to answer. Actually, I did answer it now that I think about it. And somebody asked me about books to introduce them to handicapping. Handicapping 101 from Brad Free and DRF Press. And Brad, enjoy the weekend, the refashioned Hollywood Gold Cup and Santa Anita Oaks and Derby card, and be watching it and talk soon. Just happy they got this big day in.
Yeah, so are we all. So thanks for having me, Steve, and I'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Brad Free, everybody. Always terrific. And we'll stay right here because we got a lot yet to do. Nick is joining us. Nick.